Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 27th, 2016. You're listening to the best, the earliest in the morning podcast you've ever listened to. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. Do you hear that wonderful sound, Chris?
You're going to say, like, country and stuff, but I'm going to say you mean your nasally early in the morning voice.
No, I'm going to say this is Chris Cosenza at 8:30 a.m. This is going to be the only time in 11 years that anybody in the history of the world has heard you at 8:30 a.m.
I know. It's funny because we talked about let's do the show early, and I'm like, man, I can never get up at like 7:30. And then I look at the clock, and it's like 7:34. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Did I actually get up? Oh, there's no way. So I have my breakfast, and then, all right, let's do the show early.
Mind over matter.
Oh, it's killer.
No, I was going to say, yes, that is the wonderful sounds of the great outdoors you hear.
I don't hear it, though.
Well, that's good because you don't like to hear the ambient noise in the background, but... But yeah, so there will be no cats or dogs barking today. There might be a grizzly bear mauling me here, out here on this wonderful porch, this great cabin that I won up here in North Carolina at last year's Deep Stack Charity Classic, and brought my family up here. So we're out here doing the Uncle Roland thing. Going to rent the Suck My Wake today, and do a little water skiing and stuff. But
nice.
Right now, just hanging out here in God's country, as they have to call it. Right?
So this is like a beautiful segue for you.
It is, right? See, I mean, I actually came all the way up to the cabin just so I could do this segue. 9 hours in the car, no worries. The things I do for the NEM.
Oh, man.
But no, anyhow, this whole trip started this weekend at the Deep Stack Charity Classic Poker Festival. You guys are here to talk about it forever on the show because it's just the most amazing poker charity weekend anywhere every year. And this year I actually played two events. I actually made it the festival. You know, it's the first time I think I actually played two events. I usually just play the Bass of Sunday event.
Right.
But went up early. And so the let's get the bad news out of the way first.
Okay.
My infamous raffle streak has ended.
Oh, well, it's not infamous. It's famous. Nothing wrong with it.
It depends if you guys sitting next to me at the table every year when I win a TV or a computer.
So you're not going to be like going to Ted Kaczynski's cabin next year in Montana or wherever?
No, I'm going to like pay for everything next year.
Ah, boo.
A computer, I got to buy it. A new TV, I got to buy it. If I want to come to a cabin, I got to buy it. That sucks. But no, so part of the thing that makes this the charity event so great is on the day of the actual main event, they have a bunch of people running around selling raffle tickets, and people just buy a bunch, and you put the little tickets in the little baskets of the prizes you want, or if you're a little greedy like me, you put one in every basket, so you try to win everything, so everybody's like super envious of you.
Yeah.
And I always buy $100 worth, you know, it's for the kids, right?
Yep.
And that strategy's worked well the last 3 years, but this year, no luck.
Nada.
So I walked out of there with a Corona t-shirt and a beer fanny pack that we can't figure out how to put around my fanny because my fanny's pretty big and it's not adjustable. So that's all I got out of this year. And I thought maybe I would – there's a chance that I was going to run well in the tournament, but that didn't work anyhow. But anyhow, that's back up to Saturday. Saturday was the inaugural Norman Chad's Barbecue and Brews event. And I told my wife, if we're going over early, we're getting a hotel on the beach, I'm dropping you off. I got to go play with Norman Chad, who I love to play with, and eat barbecue, which I love to eat, and, of course, drink beer, which I like to drink. So it's like the perfect tournament for me,
right? The troika of Scott Long perfection.
So we get there, and it starts off with this nice catered barbecue buffet, which is great. And then I totally forgot at this point about the brews part of it. I thought he was just going to be walking around in his little cart with a Pabst Blue Ribbon cans and signing them for people like he always does, right?
Yeah.
And I already have that, so I'm not interested in that. But now I get to the end of the buffet, I got my whole heaping plate of barbecue, and I look in the cooler to grab my Diet Pepsi out. Nope. Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Nice.
So I had a nice little tall boy there with my barbecue, and of course sat down and chatted with all of our fans from around the world that come around and play this event every year, which was really cool. And played pretty well, but went out 29th out of 103. Nothing to show for it other than barbecue and a couple paps. But this is the interesting thing about, and of course it's charity, so I don't really care necessarily, but it's a good reminder to those kids out there playing non-charity events. We had dinner reservations at 7:30 that night. The tournament started at 1. I was kind of doing the math, and I'm like, it shouldn't be that big of a deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Got to around 5:30 or so, and I'm still in this thing at 29th, and I'm like, there's no way I'm making the 7:30 dinner reservation. So the only way it's going to make the wife happy is if I come home with a fistful of cash, right? So then I had to start playing a little bit more aggressive, and I made a move with Ace-5 and came over the top of someone, and of course she had Ace-King. And the good news is I made dinner reservation, so...
Good news for your marriage, not good news for your poker.
Right, exactly. But it is. I mean, there are times I've entered tournaments when I know I've had something to do that night or that day or whatever, and that's always the worst thing to do, right?
Yeah, that's like a topic for another show. I mean, that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's terrible.
Yeah. But so in the main, I couldn't believe how card dead I was. Now everybody's out there is whining, hey, you know, you can still win if you're card dead. You got to know how to play poker, Scott. And I totally agree with you. I'm totally that person mocking the person that says that, right? Except this year was the first year that I was placed at the VIP sponsors table. So these are all the people that make this event what it is by donating lots of prizes and things like that. Because in addition to all the raffle prizes that you can buy a ticket for, they also have all this other stuff that you're automatically entered for just by entering the tournament. And then they'll come around every, you know, couple blind levels and splash the pot with gift cards or baskets or things like that.
Yeah.
So that's what makes this event great. So all of these folks get invited to play, and most of them are not poker players. Most of them play, if they play at all, they play once a year here, right?
Right.
And I've never played with that group of people before. Really great people, so it's fun to play with them and talk to them about their businesses and why they're sponsoring this charity and all that. But playing poker with them, very, very difficult.
Yep.
Right? Because I've always told people, you know, like, you know, friends from high school that never played poker, they're like, oh, man, if we sat down at the table, you'd kill me, wouldn't you? And I'm like, no. You're the worst person that I'd want to sit down next to because I have no idea what you're doing. Let me train you for 30 days and then play. Then
that's right. That's right.
Right. But when you sit down, I have no idea what you're doing. And so the problem with those players is that you have to have cards. I mean, there's really none of this playing the player thing because they're always going to call. So you have something, and you never know when they call what that something is. I mean, sometimes they show down Jack High, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes they show down a boat. So, you know, if I've got, like, fifth pair, there's a chance I could still bluff and win this pot, but there's also a big chance that I could bluff and not win this pot, right?
Yeah.
So you got to wait for you to have that big hand and then and bet them big because you know they're going to call. And I never got cards, so I literally thought I was going to be out. One of our longtime listeners, Drew Cohen, you know, he and his dad come down from Connecticut for this event every year.
Mm-hmm.
Saw him for a while, and then I saw him sitting in what I call the loser's couch right by the VIP table there. about 2 hours before dinner, and I'm like, oh, that's the worst, because now you got to sit around here for 2 hours waiting for that great catered Carrabba's dinner that everybody gets as part of their buy-in, which is part of the great thing of this. And then the 6 o'clock raffle drawing to see Scott Long win something. Oh, man, now you got to sit around for 2 hours doing that, right? But I looked down, and I was really short-stacked at this point, and I'm like, I'm going to be sitting there with Drew pretty soon. At least I have somebody to hang out with until dinner. And then I just went on this run. I doubled up 3-1 and kept going and got it up to 74,000 right after dinner. And then so here's the poker lesson in here. I made a tactical error in what ended up being a 174,000 unit pot. So I had pocket queens. I was 30 act. I raised it 3.5x or something. I got a caller, and then I had a guy said, well, this is my time, and shove. So I looked over, and he didn't look like he had that many chips, and I went to isolate against him, right? I didn't want this other guy in my pot with my pocket queens.
Mm-hmm.
So I just picked up a handful of orange 5,000 chips and threw them in the pot, signifying I'm raising, get out of my pot, right? And then all of a sudden, somebody said, I don't think that's enough. And I'm like, that's not enough to call? And then they did a countdown. Turns out this guy had 27,000 units, and then I raised it to 25,000.
Oh, man.
So now I had to call the extra 2,000, whichever is fine. And so the other guy took a while to think, and then he's like, I'm all in. And I'm like, all right, well, I got a call now. So had I done the proper thing and just moved all in, I might have got this guy to fold his ace-king.
All in pre-flop or all in when the guy said, this is my hand? Because then I still don't think it would have mattered.
Well, that guy
or
was already all in for 27,000.
Okay.
So I had 74,000 at that point. If I would have said all in, the guy next to me who had 70,000 with ace-king might not have called.
Okay.
Or at least I would have had to put the pressure on him to make that decision rather than what happened, whereas I just called the all-in, and then he had the opportunity to shove over me to try to get me to fold.
I got you now. Okay, yeah, so if you had gone all-in first, then the onus is on him to call all of his chips instead of trying to force you out in a move.
No, he might have still called,
yeah.
And that's fine. But at least I don't. Right now, I don't know, right?
Yeah.
I know how it played out because the way I played it anyhow. So anyhow, he shows ace-king. The other guy shows king-queen. That guy's already walking out of the room. he's dead to a gig. Flop comes an ace. Turns an ace, just, you know, for a little cherry on top of that Sunday. Right. And I'm down to two big blinds, which I shove on the next hand. And I'm out. And 174,000 probably would have put me near the chip leader, if not the chip leader at that time. So huge swing here at 7:30. And then I'm home having, not home, but at the bar having beers with the wife. So. Happy wife, happy life, two nights in a row. But that's a big pot, though. They go from, you know, 4,000 at some point, a couple hours earlier, shoving with 10-9 suited and getting called by Ace King and spiking a 10. And then the dealer pushed the pot to the other woman. And I'm like, God damn, my little baby hand won. So that's the poker lesson out of this whole charity discussion is don't get cute with your bets, you know. You want to isolate, just say all in, and then you don't have to worry about it, right?
Yeah.
And then a couple more things before we move on. A special shout-out to our Antioch Cruise passengers, Vicky Luz and Brian Yeager. They finished 13th and 14th, and this is out of 620-some players. So that's quite an accomplishment,
nice.
Folks. And, of course, this tournament, everybody that makes the final table, the top 10, gets a all-expenses-paid trip to Las Vegas to play in the Venetian Deep Stack championships out there. So they were just shy of going out there.
Yeah,
and I know both these players played really well. We played them with on the cruise, and they would have done really well out there. So congratulations to them, but I feel bad for them that they didn't get a little bit farther.
Yeah.
And also, I got a shout out to Larry Weeks. This is the guy. I remember last year, I got back from this, and I, you know, bragged about the whole experience, including winning this cabin that I'm at now.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Oh my God, this great listener came up and gave me this Short Stack Ninja T-shirt, which was amazing. One of the best gifts anybody's ever given me in the podcast because it's, you know, personalized, right?
Yeah, right.
And then I went to I can't remember his name. And so he came up to me today. He's like, Scott, it's Larry Weeks. Don't forget this stuff. So well, I didn't forget, Larry. Thank you for the shirt a year late.
Can you imagine? You had to wait a whole year to walk up to you and say that to you. It's terrible.
But it would have been a whole 2 years had I forgot again.
That's true. That's true.
All right. So also, while we're thanking listeners, I want to thank listener Dan Banks for sharing this crack.com article that we're going to talk about here soon. Now, it's 5 years old, but I think the advice from the writer Dennis Hong about how hard it is to make it as a professional poker player is still valid. And this is a shameless plug to check out the latest issue of Annie Up for our newest columnist, Brent Philbin, who is a pro at the $2, $5 level. And gives you tips on how to make it as one. His first tip, it's hard.
It's right.
So here's a couple of things that Dennis had to say. He said, first, it's about the math and patience, waiting for the math to be in your favor. So if you're not a patient person, I'm not. Don't do this. And I'll stop here to say, at the VIP dinner at this thing, the guy that ended up knocking me out, he owns like all the Krispy Kremes in Central Florida. Nice
guy.
Wow. Other than the fact that he knocked me out. But he was like, so you must play professionally. I'm like, no way. And Norm Chad's sitting right there laughing, right? And I'm like, and I wouldn't even if I could.
That's right.
Really, why? And I explained a lot of the same stuff that Dennis here is explaining. So patience is number one. I have no patience. Going back to Dennis's list, he says it takes a ton of tedious study time. I don't have that either.
Right.
He says, and just when you get it good, you lose it all. I can see that happening. And you stop caring about money, but should. And then you become immune to bad luck. That one's kind of an interesting discussion. And then you have to deal with guilt. And what he means is that, you know, every time that you make enough money at the poker table to support your lifestyle, which you have to do as a pro, you are denying the person at the table whose money you took from doing the same thing. And some people can put that out of their minds, but some people can't. If you're one of those people that can't put that out of your mind, you've got a big, tough road ahead of you. So,
of the six, that's the easiest one for me. I mean, really, we're all adults. We're all there doing it. That's right. What we're choosing to do. You don't have to do that. So the other ones are, yeah, it's kind of, yeah, you got to, you know, it's the same thing with, I was thinking earlier about this. Whenever somebody like that I come across now who finds out what I do for a living or knows that I play a lot or my family, they're always saying, I really think you could be a pro if you wanted. And I'm like, no. And they're like, no. And they just don't understand it. Even though I say no, and I know what I'm talking about, but they don't. I should just show them this article because
right. There's
just no way I want to go through that grind. And even if I did want to go through the grind, there's no way I'm talented enough. I'm just not. I mean, I can win at the 1-3 level. I can win on our cruises. I can win the home game occasionally. But all of these things are perfectly good examples of why it's so difficult to do this for a living, and people are just shocked when they try, and then they don't realize all these things, and then they're back to their, you know, whatever their job was beforehand, and it's a good article.
Yeah, and I think one of the things he missed, and maybe he touched on it in other things, I mean, certainly the patience is part of it, the tedious study time, is that, you know, this is what conversation I have with any of my friends who have done what we've done, and for whatever reason are now working at home. I mean, maybe not they quit their job and started their own business, but maybe their employer is progressive and allows them to work from home a couple of days a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to stay disciplined, you know, when you've spent your entire life as a hamster in a cubicle.
Yeah.
You know, with a boss coming by and saying, hey, it's 9 a.m., glad to see you here, here's a cup of coffee, get to work. And then 5 p.m., you know, Slade pulls a little pterodactyl and you get to go home, right?
Yep.
When all of a sudden you're at home and you have nothing to force you to do your job, and here part of your job is not just playing poker, but, you know, reading about poker or watching poker on TV, studying different moves, it's very easy to say, I'm going to binge watch on Game of Thrones today. And then that's not what you would do if you had a real job. So you have to be disciplined enough to be able to do that. Or if anybody calls you up, hey, we're all going out to the bar tonight. And you're like, oh, yeah, why not? And then you shouldn't be at the bar that night. You should be studying for your tournament tomorrow, resting up or whatever like that. So I think discipline he really missed here. I mean, I can probably surround it, but that's a huge one, I think.
And that's not to do the shameless plug thing again, but that's almost exactly what Brent's entire column in our magazine, the latest issue, focuses on, is the discipline of logging your hours, seeing your ROI, all that stuff, and seeing if you're actually making enough money to do it, and the discipline to have the bankroll and to keep the bankroll and nourish the bankroll and all that stuff. I mean, the column was really good to kick off his series, and you're right. Discipline is huge, especially if you don't even have any family and stuff like that. Like, you might have that as motivation if you did have family, like, God, I got to pay my bills. I got to go play poker. But if it was just you and you're kind of like, yeah, I don't have a mouth to feed except my own and I got bologna in the fridge, so I guess I won't play today. You know what I mean? It's even harder to be disciplined if you're a bachelor or something, you know? So discipline is really a key to pretty much all these things.
Right. And one of the things with Brenton, because I talk to Brenton about this a lot, and his big thing he always says is he pays himself an hourly wage. He's decided this is how much I need to make per hour to be able to continue to play poker for a living and enjoy the things I want to do when I'm not playing poker, which is, you know, we all do, right? You know, you get home at 5 o'clock, you want to go out and have some fun.
Right.
And so the problem with that is, one, you have to be disciplined enough to do that, but two, it's not like any other job where, you know, if I'm an Uber driver and I know I need to make X amount of money an hour to support my lifestyle and I only got 2 calls during the 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. hour, and I'm not making that, then I just work an extra hour or 2 hours that night and make it, right?
Yeah.
Poker, you can't guarantee that, you know, if you play that extra hour that you're going to win that hour. You could lose that hour.
Yeah, you lose everything.
And then you could keep playing, and then it comes into play that the other part of it is playing at your optimal level. So now, at that point, if you are tired, you're crabby, you're just not in the right frame of mind, but you go, I got to make another $100 today, or I'm not a winning player. Now you're chasing your tail, right?
Yeah.
So, all those reasons why I would never want to do it. So I'm very, very impressed with people that have been able to do this and continue to do it and do it successfully. But you're not going to hear about me doing it.
And hopefully you won't ever hear about you being an Uber driver, because you'd be the worst Uber driver on the
yeah,
planet.
Destination as quickly as possible.
Okay, time for Annie Updates. Dover Downs Hotel and Casino in Dover, Delaware will be awarding Annie Up Poker Cruise packages for two for our November 14th sailing out of Tampa to the top five finishers in the $65 tournament on July 6th. For more information on this event and all Annie Up Poker Cruises, go to AnnieUpCruises.com. And this one's really exciting. Congratulations to our very own advertising representative, Debbie Burkhead, for being selected for induction into the Women in Poker Hall of Fame. Debbie and European Poker Tour star Victoria Korn Mitchell will be inducted July 6th at the Gold Coast Casino in Las Vegas. Look at that. Two big things happening on July 6th.
Yeah, we're going to have to be like the parents with the one kid at the recital and one kid at the soccer game. We're going to have
right.
to both wear, right? Videotape the other one for so we can watch it on our phones, right?
That's pretty good. That was pretty good for this early in the morning for you to come up with that. That's pretty funny. So congrats, Debbie. Very well deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Deb has been really great coming over to us after Poker Player newspaper folded, and really enjoy getting to know her. So well deserved for her. And then I also want to say, I could be wrong, but I don't believe we've ever had an opportunity to get on Annie Up Poker Cruise for $65.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, no luck involved in this. This is not like a drawing where you go there and hope that they pull the ticket out and you get it, or you hit a high hand in level three. If you are the final five people in the $65 tournament, you're joining us in November on the cruise. So I hope all the folks up in that Mid-Atlantic region or anywhere they can get up there will get around and support Dover Downs. They've been really great to us with a cruise program forever, and this is just a phenomenal deal to get you on that ship. So have fun.
Absolutely. Each week we spotlight a listener who emails us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home of the Annie Up group discussions. For some reason, early in the morning, I can't say shh and shh very quickly. I don't know. My tongue doesn't work that well. Comes from James Cooper. I was in a local casino in London, England for their weekly 45-pound tournament. That's a heavy tournament.
Yes.
I am in the hijack at the final table and open the pot with Queen-Jack offsuit. Only the big blind calls. I have him covered, and although I have never played with him before, he is an older, hard-of-hearing-slash-seeing type player. By the time we get to the river, I three-barrel bluff with my queen high, and I have invested more probably two-thirds of my stack, and that is a make-or-break spot in my tournament life. The old guy in the big blind tanks for what seems like forever. He's not going to be all in, but has a huge amount invested in the hand and will be short-stacked if he loses. He makes the call, and I groan. He says he has the full house, and I groan and flip over my queen high. However, the dealer and other people at the table tell him he has only jack high. He is gutted, and I am breathing a huge sigh of relief. He then says that he did not actually check to me on the river when I bet. It had been a good minute or so after the river card was placed on the felt, and a dealer was looking at me when I counted out my bet and put it in the middle. I was sure it was my turn to act. The dealer didn't say anything was wrong, nor did the player. Should I feel bad about this? If he had fired on the river as he should have, if he thought he had the full house, I would have snap folded and been left in a very poor position with very little chance to make the money. I couldn't help but feel a bit sorry for the old guy as he muttered to himself for the next orbit or so before being eliminated and skulking off in a mood.
Well, I'll be the bad guy here because I know you probably agree with me. No, I don't feel bad about this at all.
Right.
I mean, I guess on the human level, I do feel bad that this guy didn't read his hand right, and maybe he didn't check, and I didn't see it, and the table didn't see it, and the dealer didn't see it. But that's maybe 2%, 3%. the rest of it is, you know, we had the best hand. We had the guts to bet it. We bet. The opportunity for the guy to say, hey, I didn't act yet, was when you put that bet out. Now when he called, and then after saw that he lost the hand and didn't know what he had, to say, oh, yeah, by the way, I didn't check.
Yeah.
I don't think he was angle shooting, but that would be considered an angle shot if he was a different kind of person that I thought would be doing that. If he was a straddler, yeah, that's an ankle shot.
If my job is to dig trenches for a living, I need to show up with a shovel. Do I not?
Yes.
If I can't hear or see very well, and it's my job to either ask for a seat 5 if you're playing cash, or to wear the glasses that will allow you to see the cards clearly and wear your hearing aid if it helps you hear. I mean, I can't be responsible for this guy. I mean, it was sort of like a perfect storm of things that happened to this guy. One, he either misread his hand, which he obviously did because he said he had the boat when it was over. So he misread his hand. He couldn't see the cards clearly. He didn't hear that it was his turn to act, so he wasn't paying attention. I mean, there's all these things happened, and it took forever, so obviously it was put on our good friend James here to act, and he did. And then the guy says, I didn't mean, you know, well, hey, what do you expect for me to do? You're not saying anything for a minute. He said it was a good minute,
right.
You know. Anybody who knows they have a full house, they don't wait a good minute to bet. So he's clearly confused what's going on in the action anyway. And the dealer's looking at him. So all these things had to perfectly align for this problem to happen. I can't feel bad from a playing standpoint, from a, hey, I'm in a tournament standpoint. Human being standpoint, yeah. But then again, hey, maybe it's a 45-pound lesson for this guy to say, hey, next time I play, I'm going to make sure that I have the right glasses, the right contacts, whatever, my hearing aid in. And if all that stuff's still not enough for him to see and hear better, then maybe he shouldn't be playing. At least not tournaments. At least cash games, then he can force himself, I can't play at this table until I get seat 5. Can you give me seat 5? You know, or something like that. But I don't feel bad for him. Not in a nasty way. Just, this is life. You're choosing to play this thing. You need to be prepared to be able to do that. If you can't do it, we can't feel bad for you.
But you know? Even beyond all that, I think you're right on all that stuff. So, but, you know, I know you're as well, too, sensitive about, you know, we're all going to get older and not be able to see or hear. I already can't see anything. I'm
right.
Looking at the labels, and I'm like, hey, Laura, can you read this for me? But, again, the point for me is that this could have been developed a whole different way, in a way that it would go over to the things that you're talking about here. But it didn't develop that way. This guy saw this bet, said, I call, turned over his cards, and said, wait a minute, I should have acted first. That's so,
yeah.
Even all those other things, let's say he forgot his hearing aid, forgot his glasses, forgot all that stuff, right? He was aware of the fact that this guy bet and the fact that he called, and now is trying to back up the action afterwards. So,
right.
You know, even if you do all that stuff, you forget your glasses, your hearing aid, and that, you should be able to follow the action, and you should say, wait a minute, did he bet? It's on me. And then you could back up the action at that point and decide. Or at the very least, if they say, hey, we thought you checked, he bet, action's on you, what do you want to do? Then you could fold at that point, right?
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
Not worry about it and grumble about that later. But he had a bunch of opportunities here besides the, you know, the frustrating things that all of us are going to happen as we get older mitigate this whole situation in a way that we wouldn't be talking about on the Any podcast right now.
Right. And yeah, the other thing, too, is did he... You know, was it his vision that made him think he had a full house, or was his mind, is he just older where his mind's not as sharp as it used to be, and he's remembering the cards from the hand before, or,
right.
You know, so there's a lot of things there.
I mean, that goes to the point about maybe this is a hobby that's passed you by.
Yeah.
Different story. I mean, the fact that he, you know, called the bed and said it, that's a different story. That has nothing to do with his faculties at that point, other than just not following the action.
Yeah. I mean, I feel bad, like I said, from a, hey, the game will be passing you by standpoint, sorry, but I can't feel bad when you're in a tournament. We got an email this week from somebody who was like, there are no friends at the poker table.
Right.
You know, there are only either acquaintances or enemies. I mean, you know, you can't, you're playing for money. You're playing for, you know, for your chance to win. You're playing for victory. You can't have that kind of empathy at the table. I mean, you can have it internally. But you still can't let that affect the way you feel when you're playing. Let's say James held on to this now for the rest of the tournament. You know, he's not going to be able to focus on what's at hand, which is trying to win the tournament. So you got to let that stuff go and, you know, deal with it later, if anything. But no, I don't feel bad. Hey, you know what? We got a Brandon Will O'Malley's move. Here it comes, part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing in a $1, $2 No-Limit Hold'em home game. This is a game we don't frequent, and for good reason. They constantly straddle, love action, and play side games. For example, tonight's game If you win a hand with the 9 of clubs, everyone owes you a $5 chip. The game is 8-handed. The blinds post, as does the straddle. It's limped around to us in the cutoff with the, 9 of clubs, 7 of clubs. Okay, we'll play the game. We limp along. There's one fold, the button, but the rest of the table calls. We have position in a $28 pot, and the flop is quite intriguing. The 9 of spades, 6 of diamonds, 4 of clubs. We have top pair, no kicker, but a backdoor straight and flush draw. It also gets checked around to us. Even more intriguing. We lead out for $25. There's a good chance we're ahead here. The initial straddler calls, but everyone else folds. We've been playing for about 2 hours and have picked up a few things on this opponent. He is seemingly an action junkie who loves to trap and can often overplay hands. Again, we've had limited play against him, so this may be a rash judgment. He started the hand with 150 to our 300. There's about $75 in the pot, and the turn is the 8 of clubs. This is a very good card for us. We still have top pair, but we now have an open-ended straight and a flush draw. He checks to us, and we lead out again for $50. This time, our opponent shoves his remaining 125 into the pot. So, there's 250 in the pot, and we have to call about $75. Additionally, if we win, we get more money from every player at the table. Does this sweeten the deal? What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. And it comes from Don Rollins. And he's like, hey, guys, long time no apes. Yeah, it's been a long time without apes. But remember papes, though. You can still play papes.
That's right.
He says, I moved to Dallas, and now I'm about an hour away from Windstar in Oklahoma. So I wonder if he plays that Dallas straddle up there.
Yeah.
And he says, I've been sitting at a 2-5 no-limit table. Oh, so he's in the Dallas straddle game. 2-5 no-limit table for about 4 hours, so I have a good feel for the table. The table's pretty passive pre-flop, but all the money can go in post-flop with top pair versus middle pair. Hand folds around to the cutoff, who raises to $15. Cutoff is a loose aggressive player who's bought in 5 times for a total of $2,500 and won some recent pots and now has about 1,000. He's been raising every hand folded to him and calling every bet. Button folds, and I'm in the small blind with queen, queen.
Okay, well,
you're going to have to take this because I am obviously not good at playing pocket queen.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to, you know, just call. You know what I mean? We're in a small blind. We're going to be out of position the rest of the hand. We're going to want to, you know, at least take control of this now and narrow the field because inevitably something's going to come to scare you or, you know, whether it's cards or the people behind you, the way they act. So you really have to, you know, make sure that you make a decent enough bet here that, not that you want to lose value by betting too much and then having everybody fold and then you move on to the next hand with queen, queen, which, you know, some people will be happy with that, but the guy raised to 15. I don't want to call 15 and then make the big blind say, oh, 15, that's, you know, I got ace 3 in my hand. Now it's 30 in the pot. I might as well call this easy little 15, you know, so you want to make it more. So, I mean, I'm thinking like 50 or 60.
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know how deep we are right now, but yeah, I reminded myself in this tournament I played last weekend, I want to be heads up with queens, because it's hard enough to play already. So, let's see what he did. He said, this table hasn't seen many re-raises pre-flop, and I want to get heads up here, so I raise it to $50.
Hey, sounds like I wrote this.
Yeah. You know, and I forgot temporarily here that he said that it's been pretty passive pre-flop. So, I mean, maybe even a smaller raise could have actually affected the same. Actually, I don't know what's going to happen here, but that might have made me think maybe I don't need to wager at least 50 here because of that. But Hopefully, this raise will get what we want to happen. So we'll see.
You know, when I make bets like this, I want to make the bet that's right, not the bet that's the temperament of the table. because that's just, you're just adding another element to, you know, another intangible to get wrong. I just want to make the right bet. I never think like that. I never think, well, this table is pretty, I mean, only maybe if it's like been the initial raise, like everyone's been doing 10 the whole time and I'll do 10 or something like that, even though I know 10 is probably not the right amount. But here, when I want to re-raise and I'm out of position and I don't want to take a chance of saying, well, these guys are pretty passive, I think I can get away with doing it by 35, I don't want to ever take that chance. I want to always make the right move regardless of the temperament of the table.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And from a philosophical standpoint, that's probably...
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I guess my argument would be that, you know, the whole reason behind the whole 2.5x rather than 3x movement has been to not wager any more than you have to affect the change you want.
Yeah, you get stuck in your little tournament head there, buddy. You make tournament moves too many times at the cash game tables.
I totally agree, but this is a poker philosophy thing that transcends cash. You know, if I can get you to fold $20, why would I wager $50 and put the extra $30 at risk if I'm wrong? That's the whole idea here.
So. Yeah, no, but how do you find that out?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. So if the table's pretty passive pre-flop, generally I'm going to say, I mean, again, this is just all we know based off of what Don has mentioned, but I would think, I played a lot of these passive pre-flop tables where almost no one raises, and when one person raises, then all of a sudden one eyebrow goes up from all the players, like, whoa. And then if somebody re-raises them, it's like, whoa, too rich for my blood, I'm out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if that's the case, then, you know, 30 might do the same thing as 50, but I'm going to guess, because it's hand of the week, we're actually going to have a discussion here as this hand's going to continue, so let's do that.
Okay.
All right. He says, I'm shocked when the big blind has mostly been playing pretty straightforward flat calls. Big blind started with about the same number of chips as I did, 750. The cutoff is expected calls, and we go to the flop. Pot is now 150, and the flop is queen 10-3 rainbow, and we are first to act.
Well, first I want to point out the rarity of Scott saying three.
Yeah, I thought about that as soon as it came out. It's early.
But then before you got to the flop, you said he flat called, and usually that's a giveaway that they have something.
Yeah, well, I ended out as a second flat call, so they both flat called.
They
here.
Both flat called. Oh, it's even worse.
The first one I got through, and then the second one I'm like, all right.
But we love this flop, so we're not worried about anything now. I mean, even if somebody called 50 with King Jack or Jack 9 and they have a draw to a straight, I don't care. This is like the most perfect flop ever, except for Queen Trey. So we're first to act, right? So let's see. 150 in the pot. We took control of the hand. We got two callers. It would be stupid to not bet. It'd be silly not to bet. So
we're expecting this a bet, so that's why we have to bet.
Yeah, it's funny. You said it was a passive table. So if I want to get into your head, the way you were thinking, I'm thinking 2/3 of pot is probably too much. We've got 100; they're all gonna like scurry into the, you know, into the washing machine or whatever, like roaches. So I don't know if that's the right bet, but I feel like if I'm in a normal table, I'm betting 100 here. If it's because it's passive, they don't bet that much, I'd probably bet 75, 80. So, or maybe even 65, 70. I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking a minimum half pot here, so I'm going to probably go 75.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's what I would do because it's a passive table like you were talking earlier. If I knew that 100 would scare everybody out, I want at least one caller here because I want to get value for these top set. So, yeah, I would bet. If 75 I die, I get at least one caller, that's what I would bet.
All right. And that's exactly what our hero says. He says, I want to make it look like I'm making a standard continuation bet, so I bet $75.
Hmm.
Big blind calls, cutoff calls.
Wow.
Didn't work. And the turn is a king. So now our board is queen, 10, Trey, king.
Well, that's sweet, because somebody had ace, king, and didn't believe us, and they were calling for the gutter. Now they've got top pair, top kicker, and they think they're good. So I love that king.
I'm not liking it against Ace-Jack, though.
I just don't think Ace-Jack would call that bet on the flop. Are they really going to call 50, 100, or 75 and 50? First of all, 50 with Ace-Jack, and then, because like you said, it was right. A passive table, and then another 75 for a gutter? I don't think so. There's no way Jack-9 is calling either pre-flop with 50 bucks.
I could see a suited Jack-9. I think a suited Jack-9 is more likely than an Ace-Jack.
All right, well, here's the deal. let's rewind a little bit. He said, "I'm shocked when the big blind calls." Right? And he's been straightforward. He's not the Jack Nine, and the other guy raised preflop to 15. He's the cutoff. He may have done it with Jack Nine. I doubt it. And if he did do it with Jack Nine, does he really call the raise by us with Jack Nine after that?
No, just I because think he might. Now, I'm not trying to pigeonhole into it. I'm not trying to get scared here, but I could see at a passive preflop table, I get Jack Nine and a hijack. This is a chance for me to pick up some blinds or get heads up against somebody when I'm shown aggression and win a pot without having to show, right?
Right.
So I could do that. And then this is something that I've noticed in tournaments a lot now, and maybe it's wrong, and maybe I'm making too loose of calls here, but when I get raised from the small blind in those spots, I got to give the small blind credit for having a big hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a big hand, and I have a hand that can flop big, which a suited Jack 9 can, this is an opportunity for me to play for stacks for that guy, and if I can afford the call, if it's not going to, you know, not tragically put me at a disadvantage, I'm going to take that loose call and hopefully stack the guy, because I know I can put him down to ace, king, aces, kings, queens, something like that, if he's going to re-raise me from the small blind.
That's a good point. You sort of sold me on the Jack 9 now, in the sense that it could be...
I think it's more likely than the ace jack. You're right. I don't think the gutter is going to make this $75 call.
Right.
But an open-ender, absolutely. Especially if that's the way it's probably impossible that this whole hand played out that way. But if that's the way it played out, then that's exactly the kind of flop I'm looking for. Other than, I'm sure one of these cards is also with my suit as well too. So,
yeah, the pre-flop thing is the harder part for me. If it's Jack Nine, I can see him making that call because he's open-ended and it's a big pot and it's multi-way. And, you know, he's probably got a ton of money in front of him. He can afford it. So
right, because he's closing out the action there, right?
Exactly.
Got to worry about getting re-raised after making that $50 call.
So if you can sell me on the pre-flop again, then yeah, I think I would think that. It's just hard for me to imagine that guy in the big blind having Jack 9 when he said he was pretty standard the way he's been playing, and all of a sudden, boom, he calls a $50 raise with somebody behind him who raised earlier who could force him out of the pot. If he does, if he ends up having Jack 9, it's like the worst call to me. I think that's a horrible play.
All right, what about Pocket Kings?
Pocket Kings, I would think that at that point, at some point along here, before he got to the set of kings, he would have made a raise or a bet. Because queen 10-3, somebody's betting out. You know, I mean, I guess you could smooth call if you're the big blind with the pocket kings.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. If I'm looking at a worst-case scenario here, I can make a case for the big blind having pocket kings and a cutoff having the jack 9. And both of those are bad for us now.
Yeah, it's a very narrow hand range, but...
Yeah, only one of them has to be correct for us to be pretty much drawing dead here.
Yeah, you got to pair the board, but yeah.
Well, we can't pair board against pocket kings.
No, I know. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. I know what you're saying now. You've one out. Yeah, it's just such a narrow range for specifically for both players, too. It's
and
ridiculous.
I'm not saying that's how I'm going to play this hand, but I'm like, I'm giving credence at this point to who's in this pot with based off all this betting and this passive table, right?
Yeah. Well, I, to be honest, I mean, if I'm at this table, I'm not fazed by this yet. I mean,
I still got to bet here.
I'm still going to bet here. So if we bet 75 earlier, that's 225 from two callers plus 150, so 325, 375 in the pot. You know, I'm probably betting 150 or so, maybe a little more.
Yeah, I think probably a little bit more, but
Probably a little more. But then again, I would have bet more than 75 at this table, so I don't know what I would have bet. You know, I don't know what I would have bet at this table if I'm playing it, but somewhere around 160, 170 or so, maybe.
Well, the problem is the raise, if we get a raised here, I don't know what it is. I mean, we've already identified two really bad hands for us, but it could be an ace-king situation, right?
Right. That's what I was saying earlier. I thought maybe ace-king would be ideal now.
Or it could be some kind of two-pair now, king-queen.
That's right. It could have been king-queen. Could have flopped top pair, second kicker, and thought he might have been good and wanted to see what we were going to do. And floated us or something, and then when we didn't check, we bet. Now he's thinking, okay, well, now I've got top two. You know, I might be good here. And so, yeah. Jeez. Well, I'm making that bet. I can't check.
Right. We'll make the bet. And it's when we get raised is where we got a gut check time here, I think. Right. So. All right, so our hero says, I really don't like it. I'm not sure why. I think we gave you a couple reasons why. Ace-Jack and Jack-9 now have a straight, and the guy on my left could have King-King. Oh, wow, look at that. I decided to check to see who likes the king. See, I think you need a bet here to find out.
Yeah, I mean, if he checks and then they make big bets, then he's going to lose a minimum, because then he knows that he's behind. He knows that somebody has that straight or a set. Whether or not that set is kings, though. Somebody could have a set of tens or a set of threes, and they think they're good and they're not. But if they both get into a betting thing, then you know one of them has a straight, probably. The odds of all three of them having sets are ridiculous. So I don't really like the check. I would have bet, but if the check works out and they do go crazy betting, I'm folding.
Okay. All right. The big blind pushes all in for his remaining 600, and the cutoff, of course, calls.
Of course he does.
The pot is 1625 now, and we need to call 600 if we're going to stick around.
Well, the only hand that we're dead to, we're not really dead to either because we still make quads, but that's not a reason to call, is really pocket king. So even if they have a straight, we still have, 10 outs or whatever it is to pair the board. So, I don't know. I think I'm folding. That's a lot of money. That's three times.
Are they both one betting week and the other one calling week? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
One of them has a hand, and I mean, the best case scenario is they both have some kind of two pairish thing, which seems really out of the realm of possibility, doesn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like those two cards together for both of them to make two pair.
It seems like we're up against either the set of kings or the straight.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm folding. It's ridiculous. I, you know, going in this hand, as soon as I saw that flop, I'm like, yeah, I'm taking this at the end no matter what. You know, and then now I'm thinking about folding the Jack 9. I really think now we're beat. I think someone really has Jack 9, which really, really drives me crazy because I just can't. I can see Jack 9 calling preflop in a big game if you have a ton of money in front of you. Like you said, if you have like.
Well, it's a pretty deep game right here.
Yeah, if you have a deep mile, I can see you calling Jack 9. And that's why it's so frustrating to play games like this, because when they're really deep, they're playing any two cards, and it's hard to put logic into some of these hands, you know.
Right.
So yeah, I think I'm laying it down. I'm gonna make a good fold. I think if I fold here, I really do.
Yeah.
Jeez.
All right. Let's see our hero. What to do? Three question marks. I would actually add six or seven more. But
I know.
Yeah. As I said, the pot's 1625. We need to call 600. I'm dead to a set of kings, but I have outs of the board pairs against the straight. I'm getting a little bit more than 3-1 on my money, which isn't quite enough, but I decide I want the chance to win a $2,000 pot. Oh, we bet the apple. And I call.
Well, that's not 3-1 on his money, though. Yeah. 3 times 600 is 1,800. Well, yeah, he said a little over it, and he's getting actually less than that.
Yeah, yeah, which makes it even worse. But all right, well, the river is a 4. The cutoff shows pocket trays. And the big blind has a jack, 9 of spades.
So it's almost exactly what we were worried about, except the kings instead of a set of threes.
Yeah.
And so the big blind...
Funny, the whole conversation, we didn't talk about anybody else having a set. That makes a lot more sense, too. I can't believe we missed that.
Well, no, I said it. I said it earlier. I said we wouldn't be worried about those, though.
Right. And no, then... I know, but I mean, that's a legitimate thing that I
should have talked about, but... So the Jack 9 of spades was the big blind, so that's what makes it even harder to believe.
Yeah, because it kind of defeats my whole story that I set out for why I would do it.
And the fact that we have to wonder now, did he misread this table? Because when he says this guy has been playing pretty straightforward flat calls with Jack 9 of spades, I mean, really, how straightforward was this guy playing to all of a sudden wake up in a big blind with a guy left behind to act who had raised before that, and it was still in play that he could come over the top again, calls with Jack 9. So, I mean, how straightforward was this guy playing? What kind of a player was he? And all of a sudden just change.
Is if, you know, the way to play poker is to play against your type, right?
Yeah.
So if I've set these folks up, then I'm this pretty straightforward dude. Now here's an opportunity for me to step out a little bit, and if it works out, then I'm going to get credit for it, right? That's exactly what happened here.
Yeah, when I want to play against my... If I want to play against the temperature of what I've been playing at the table and everyone thinks it's one thing. I also don't want to make horrible mistakes doing that or horrible decisions either. To me, calling that Jack 9 is not a good decision.
This guy started with 750 and had to call 50, which is less than 10% of his stack, right? With a jack suited Jack 9. And so it's kind of the reverse of what I was talking about by the other guy. You know, I'm kind of making that move with the Jack 9 to try to take the blinds down. And then anytime I see a small blind raiser, I think they're vulnerable to a hand like that.
Now, that all makes perfect sense if no one else is in the hand.
You
have a guy behind you who raised first and still waiting, licking his chops, that he could come over the top, and you're wasting $50 with Jack 9.
That's the risk you take there.
That's what I'm saying. So do you really want to risk money?
That guy's the cutoff and made a raise and maybe tried to take down the blinds, and now he sees the small blind make a big raise and the big blind calls, and maybe he decides to lay it down then.
I mean, I know he's a loose, aggressive player. You mentioned that earlier. So that might come into the thinking of this guy that he's not, but he's loose, aggressive. Why wouldn't he come over the top now and say, you guys don't really have big hands. I'm the one that started off all this aggression. And you're notorious for saying, it's only a cash game. Fold it and go on to the next hand. You're going to be on the button pretty soon. You know what I mean? To me, it's like,
right.
Why risk all that money in the big blind with a guy behind you who's loose, aggressive, has a ton of money in front of him. He had $2,500 in front of him. Or no, that's not what he had. He bought in for a bunch, right?
Yeah, but he's down to
1,000. Yeah, he's down to 1,000. All right, so he doesn't have a ton of money. But still, he has a decent amount of money for a 2-5 game in front of him. And he's loose aggressive, and he's the one that raised pre-flop. And now it's going to get back to him, and you've called with Jack 9 out of position to this guy who's crazy, you know, loose aggressive, and he's the one who showed aggression early. How do you know he's not going to come over the top now for 160, 180, and now you've just wasted $50 on Jack 9?
I will say, though, that's not really the style of a loose aggressive, right? A loose aggressive is to be the driver of the action, but once they get pressure, then they know, hey, this is not a hand I want to be in anymore.
He called it. He called the $50 raise after raising.
But he didn't raise it.
No, I understand, but I mean, so clearly he was getting involved.
If I'm in the small blind with Jack 9, that's what I'm banking on, either that guy folding or calling. What you're saying is you're worried about him raising, which is a legitimate fear against most players, but I don't think a loose aggressive player is going to raise there, unless it's the one time that he's woke up with a real hand.
Yeah, it's a lot of variables I have to dodge with Jack 9.
Is. But again, I'm putting in less than 10% of my stack in a chance to stack a player or two, and it ended up working a stack too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a borderline for me. That's a borderline call for me. I don't know if, like, I'm in your camp when it comes to cash games in the sense that why get involved because I'm going to stack this guy? I can stack somebody later, you know, sure. When I have somebody behind me who's crazy to me. I just, that's a variable that I don't want to be playing against the rest of the hand because he's still loose aggressive. We're talking about just pre-flop here. After the hand gets flopped, now he's loose aggressive again. He resets the counter and gets to be a loose aggressive player again that I can't – I'm in out of position against. It's just a real risky move to me.
That's the big weakness in this Jack 9 is that you almost never flop it.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll flop what we flopped here, but you're still drawing, and now you're going to have to put on quite a bit of money to hopefully hit that draw.
You know, if we reset this and start it over, and the guy doesn't stack it, and it comes Jack 4 Deuce Rainbow, and he loses his entire stack, you're on the other camp now, and you're saying that's why you don't play Jack 9 in big blind. So just because he won it, now you're defending it. But I really think if we did this in the beginning, well, you know what I mean.
Explain how that could happen.
You know what I mean. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here. If we started this all over and the guy lost his whole stack, we'd be bitching at him saying, hey, this is why you don't play Jack 9, dummy. And now the guy did it. It's like, oh, it's only 10% of his stack. He's got a chance to stack you, and he did. And it's like, okay, so it worked out great, but that seems results-oriented. You know?
Yeah, it does. But
I would never get into that position. I don't think I would. I think I would have just said, you know what, Jack 9, this guy wants to make it 50 in a small blind. There's a guy behind me who's loose-aggressive. Go at it. I'll see you in the next hand when I get ace-kick, you know, and stack you. I don't know. That was I couldn't believe it when you convinced me it was Jack 9. But I don't think I would have actually gotten there on my own with the way this hand had played out in the beginning. I mean, eventually I might have. When those guys went 600, then call, I would have gotten out of it by then, which I did. And when we did the analysis anyway, but right. At the table, there's no way I'm thinking that guy has Jack 9 when that turn comes. I just think it when they shove and do all that stuff, then I'm like, okay, I guess I believe you, and I let go, and especially with another caller. But I don't think I could have ever in that game put that guy on Jack 9 at that moment, you know, until they made those huge bets. And I'm glad they did.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not I'm sure he's not because he called. But I would have folded. That's a crazy hand. I didn't think it was going to be crazy either. When we were first doing it, I thought it was going to be a quick hand. It always happens on the show.
Every hand to a crazy hand.
You know, and we always talk about, too, that the hand of the week is always almost negative, so you always think, oh, Jack 9 has to be out there or something because we almost never win these hands. But in this case, it was very tough sell for me, and it got there, too. That's what he had. I can't believe it. All right, enjoy the wilderness. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti-Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.